This film is about the past, present and future of the slate quarrying communities of North Wales. Slate making is the only real industry North Wales ever had. It began in the 18th century, reached a peak in 1898, and has been declining ever since. This decline has meant far more than the loss of jobs. Slate was a way of life with its own values, traditions and culture. All this is dying, leaving a nostalgia tempered by a certain bitterness, resentment and a loss of direction. Talisane is a slate quarrying village in the centre of the Nantlle Valley, 10 miles south of Carnarvon. The Nantlle Valley once had a dozen working slate quarries, but life in Talisane revolved around the Dorothea, a group of four sheer-sided pits, each more than 1,000 feet deep. The Dorothea, the name means God's gift to the valley, once employed 500 men. It has slowly filled with water since 1970, when the company closed down. A Dorothea quarryman and former secretary of the North Wales Quarrymen's Union, Owen Humphreys.
Biggest change I see here now, the colour of the birds that can be seen has turned from black to white. The jackdaws used to flock here years ago, and they always warned the rockmen of the dangers that hung above them. They were very curious birds, these jackdaws were. They warned the workers, and as sure as the jackdaws kept a row in it, as sure as God is in heaven, something would drop from the rock face to the bottom during the time they were mustering, you see. No, they've all gone somewhere. Where, I don't know. But they saved many lives, and it was tragic, really. When I was young, I used to shoot a few of them, but I very much regret it now. Oh, when we were leaving school, you see, at the end of the term, our sight was on the quarry. And we thought we were men before we were boys. And we were waiting for the day anxiously to become slate makers. In my time, I remember about 40 saw benches here, either side of us. And there were about 120 men working in this mill at that time. Mind you, I maintain the arduous work that we went through, we weren't prepared to have our children in the same industry as ourselves. I honestly believe it would be the greatest sin I could commit to insist on my boys coming in the slate quarry. It's the community, the quarrying community I miss mostly. Oh, they were a good lot. They were a good lot. We had choirs, we had Eisteddfodau, we had a brass band second to none in Wales. There isn't any one of them going now. Well, now then, what's gone wrong in the machinery?
The slate industry is almost finished in the Nantlie Valley. No new industry has replaced it. In Blaenau Ffestiniog, there's been a similar decline, but two companies are still in business. The North Wales slate industry started in the mid-18th century. The Industrial Revolution brought a rapid increase in town growth and population. Slate was the ideal roofing material for houses and factories. It was both durable and cheap. Slate began as a muddy sediment, laid down 500 million years ago when what is now North Wales was covered by sea. In time, this mud was subjected to huge pressure and heat, compacting it into a dense, watertight and erosion-resistant rock. Most important of all, slate will cleave into blocks and then into thin sheets. North Wales had more good quality slate than anywhere else in the world. And by the end of the 19th century, the Welsh slate quarries, developed mainly by English entrepreneurs, were employing 16,000 men. One of the largest and most prosperous quarries in Blaenau Ffestiniog was the Oakley, which ran for 200 years before it closed in 1971. Good slate was left behind, and the Oakley site has been reopened on a small scale by the new owner, Will Roberts.
The reason we're in it is for profit. We reckon, and we have proved, that we can run slate, extract slate profitably and put it on the market. There is a market, albeit not as large as it was 100 years ago, but there is a very profitable market, and we extract the best slate in the world from this mine. And in that sense, prestige houses, architect design buildings, you know, kind of really top class buildings, they still go for the best possible material. So there's a very good market.
The open cast quarrying methods that Will Roberts has introduced are unusual in Blaenau Ffestiniog. The derelict workings and tips which surround the town all stem from 200 years of underground mining. Removing huge quantities of useless hillside was expensive. The Blaenau Ffestiniog quarry owners found it more profitable to drive tunnels straight into the best quality slate veins.
The story of Blaenau Ffestiniog is quite interesting. The original town in this area was a village called Llan Ffestiniog, Llan being the church of Ffestiniog. This particular area had about 800 people living here, and that grew up to about 15,000 people by the 1900s. And the only reason those people came here to work was because the wage rates was better than they were getting somewhere else. Just in the same way as if you went to work nowadays on a North Sea oil rig or went to Saudi Arabia, you do it not because you like working in the North Sea or you like the sun in Saudi Arabia, but because the wage rate is attractive. Who the hell would work underground in a place like this, apart from the fact the money was good?
The mountainsides around Blaenau Ffestiniog are honeycombed with more than 100 miles of tunnels and chambers, some of them 1,500 feet below the surface. The Mina Ferrin mine is the last of the underground quarries. Today, it employs 8 miners who use the same techniques as their forefathers, except that they work by battery cap lamps instead of candles. And the cost of the black powder they use for blasting is no longer deducted from their wages. The slate is quarried from the rock face by drilling a hole several feet deep, filling it with gunpowder, inserting a length of fuse, and tamping it down with a wad of newspaper. The men use high explosive to clear away unwanted rock, but gunpowder is used for the slate quarrying proper because the pressure it exerts is relatively gentle. There's less risk of damaging the slate. On the surface, working conditions and manufacturing methods at the Mina Ferrin have changed little over the years. It's difficult to justify capital investment in a declining industry, so the labor-intensive, tedious sequence of skilled operations to turn slate blocks into roofing slates is more or less the same as it was 100 years ago. Forty years ago, the Mina Ferrin employed 350 men. Now, there are only 20.
It's a classic case of a mining community. While the material is there and you've got an expanding market, then the companies that operated these mines paid wages which were attractive enough to get people in the area. Now, over the last 50, 60 years, the situation changed. After the First World War, you had the recession right across Europe where the market for the slate was. And the result of that, there were far more men here than the industry could support. And stockpiling of slate happened, and eventually the companies in this area either went bust or shed labor. People find it very, very difficult. Conceptually, they work for a monolithic organization. So it was very difficult for people to think of starting on their own in a private business, because they've always been employees as such and not entrepreneurs.
As the slate industry in Blaenau Ffestiniog has declined, the characteristic social life of the quarries has disappeared as well. The cabane, where the quarrymen had their lunch, was once a unique institution. Quarrymen were keen on self-education, and they subscribed to a cabane fund to buy books and pamphlets. The cabane was a centre of organised literary, musical, religious and political discussion. All this is gone. Few people in Blaenau Ffestiniog miss the other aspects of quarry life, the hard, monotonous grind of walking 5 miles uphill to a job which carried a high risk of serious injury or lung disease caused by inhaling slate dust.
People used to suffer a lot from bronchial troubles. A lot of it was caused through the dust in the chest. Some had heart trouble, that's through heavy breathing with the lungs clogging up with dust. They were out of breath in no time.
Slate dust irritates and scars lung tissue. Ventilation in the mines and workshops was very poor. For the past 30 years, Richard Lewis has been carving slate headstones for men who died from silicosis.
It doesn't mention that they died of slate disease, or the slate dust disease, but what I notice is that they're all young, like, you know, between 50, 55, some even younger than that. Well, we've had occasions lately when people feel that the dust itself has killed their husband, and they've been changing to granite, taking granite as a gravestone. They've just got the idea that the slate killed their husband's life, because there was no escape for it there. You just had to breathe it, like, in the mine itself. They were all covered in dust. There was just dust on the faces, on the clothes and everything, like, you know. And just these candle lights just flickering away, and it's unbelievable that they could work in such a place.
In the open quarries of the Nantlie Valley, Llanberis and Bethesda, the dust hazard was not as great. But working conditions were equally harsh. Fatal accidents or serious injury were an inevitable hazard of drilling and blasting on the rock face. The great Penryn quarries at Bethesda were started in the 18th century by an Englishman, Richard Pennant, with a fortune made on the sugar plantations of Jamaica. Pennant's descendants, the Penryn family, built a castle near Bangor, which remained in the family until 1970, when it was given to the National Trust in lieu of death duties. One of the Bethesda men who worked in the Penryn quarry was Bob Hughes. He spent 40 years there as a rockman and slate maker.
Dyma garreg las ora y Penryn. Ac yna, dan ni'n ei holltyn, maen nhw wedi llifio, a mi dwi yna yn mynd i holltyn nhw rwan. A i'r tewdwr sydd yn debycach o fod yn dew llechan to. Ac yna, dwi'n mynd i holltu rhain rwan, ac yna, cawn ni'n haddu wedyn. My language is Welsh, of course, isn't it? That's why my English is at fault sometimes. I think in Welsh, and I got to translate it. If we were trying to get the best roofing slate, you look for the best. Then you just try to split them. Not too thin, not too thin, or else the heat, or a very cold weather might affect a very thin slate. So you split them to the best possible thickness. cyfan o. Yn barod i'n hafydd, llechan, yn barod i roi ar y drafal a i'n hafydd i roi ar y to. Practice makes perfect. The eyes of the quarryman is as true as a joiner's square. That's what the old saying is. Yes, the eyes of the quarryman is as true as a joiner's square, which is quite true too. That's true. And it comes by practice, isn't it? The same as playing the violin or an organ or anything like that. And it's the same with everything, I think. Practice. I've worked there all my life, and I can tell you this, you were on your own then. Yes, you were on your own. You had to pay for everything. I can give you an example now. The whole mountainside came down, millions of tons, and I lost everything. Everything, every tool, rope, shovels, sledgehammers, crowbars, and I didn't get a penny from the company. They're still there under their fall. So we had to buy another set. That's how we were treated. And that's how Lord Pendrin built his castle, I suppose. It's a sore point with me. I haven't been there. Some people tell me that I'm at fault. I'm looking at that huge building and the luxury that surrounds it. And to think of my people and the people of this area working for absolutely nothing in the quarry. They were just pouring wealth to one family and living on the breadline, was it? And he was having all the chestnuts, isn't it? They tell me that I should go in, but somehow I think of my forefathers, what they've suffered. I've heard my father and mother saying things about the 90 and 100 strike and the struggle they had and the cruelty. And that was how Lord Pendrin treated people.
George Sholto Gordon Douglas Pennant, the second Baron Penrhyn, refused to tolerate any trade union activity in the quarry. This finally led to the longest strike in British industrial history. On 6th November 1900, Penrhyn instructed his English manager, E.A. Young, to issue a lockout notice. The strike which followed was to last 3 years. C. Sheridan Jones, a correspondent for the London Daily News, went to Bethesda to cover the strike.
The fact is that Lord Penrhyn presents grossly and palpably the old feudal view, the divine right of the landlord to do what he likes with his own. The men who are suffering today urge that it is their skill and toil which give value to the quarry, and surely they have some claim to control the conditions of their own labour. This time there will be no half measures. It is a fight to the finish. If the men surrender, they will go in utterly beaten and crushed. Lord Penrhyn's victory will be decisive.
They wanted their own terms, and Lord Penrhyn said that he wanted to run his quarry, on his terms. In the end, of course, the men were beaten. They had to go back on his terms. It was either that or starve.
The men went back to the quarry, but the 3 years of the strike and the hardship which followed have never been forgotten in Bethesda.
The suffering was so deep. If you go to the cemeteries here, people dying, well, when they should be in the best of health, isn't it? People working in the quarry, long hours, working Saturday afternoons, then coming home, try and find a job on the farm to help. It was slave labour, really, slave labour. Taking what they could out of a man. I don't miss the quarry at all, but I miss the company. I miss the cultural company, listening to men that should have been through college. Once, there were brass bands, drama and debating societies, and several choirs in Bethesda. Now, there's only the Penryn Male Voice Choir, still one of the finest in Wales, but only three of its members are quarrymen. Men once worked the Penryn quarry. By the 1960s, this had fallen to fewer than 1,000. In 1964, the Penryn was sold to the English construction company Sir Alfred McAlpine and Son. And in 1969, the huge De Norwick quarry at Llanberis went into liquidation. McAlpine's bought that too. The quarry fixtures and fittings were auctioned off.
Lot 613, I have an opening bid of £250. 250, 350, 400, and 50, 550, £600. At £600 for the Dolvadan, at 650, 750, 850 in front, 950, 1,000 guineas, 1,000 guineas on the front row. 1,000 guineas there. Is there 1,100 about? May I say 1,100? At 1,000 guineas then, going once, twice, the last time at 1,050.
Penryn quarries had long suffered from a lack of capital investment, and the traditional labour-intensive methods were hopelessly out of date. McAlpine's brought in new management and new quarrying techniques. Director Richard Boyle.
Blasting techniques are the principal change. We've installed much larger drills. We still use the gunpowder that's always been used in slate quarrying, probably one of the last industries to use gunpowder. Whereas they used to drill perhaps 1-inch diameter holes, removing individual blocks from the face, we now drill horizontal holes at the base of the face and bring the full 60-foot-high gallery down in one operation. Men were lifting slate onto rail trucks by hand. We are now doing it by machines. Our slates have always been in demand, and I think it's fairly safe to assume that the demand will continue. There's the two sides, there's the repair market, which has always been a steady market. In addition to that, the roofing slate has still got the reputation for being the premier roofing material. We are the largest remaining producer, and we are now beginning to exploit export markets basically all over the Commonwealth and in North America and Europe that have been to a large extent neglected.
It's easier for the men. The McAlpine has done a great deal to take the strain and the heavy work off the men. But I think the slate craft suffers a lot. That they're ignoring the true quarrymanship. In those days, every quarryman took pride in his work. We handled the slates as we were handling crockery, because it meant money for us and wages. McAlpine is doing a huge profit, but I think as the quarry as a quarry will finish far sooner, because they are taking huge area of slates off. And I don't think it will last.
Thank you.
There's mass production, isn't it? Mass production now. So many generations have been living on the slate. I'm supposed they are producing more slates now with a handful of quarrymen than the Pendrin did with three times the number of quarrymen.
We rely on the local expertise to extract the material. The men that are working here have learnt the new skills of operating heavy machinery, but the underlying skill is there. It's understanding the cleavage, the jointing, the texture of the slate, the colours of the slate. That's one thing that it takes a long time to learn, and we've found that it's impossible to avoid. The job itself is a hard, arduous, fairly monotonous work, and not exactly the sort of occupation that people want to enter when leaving school. We have endeavoured to produce a splitting machine, which we hope in the long term will overcome this problem. The machine we have now is a prototype. We foresee a great future in the automation of this machine, which will give us substantially more production than we obtain from a single slate maker.
As a quarryman, I don't see them perfecting a machine capable until they can guarantee every block of slate to see if it was perfect. As you know, as you are aware, every machine that you introduce to any kind of work does away with the workforce. You do away with men.
McAlpines have also installed machinery to exploit the waste material that's always been unavoidable in slate production. McAlpines are crushing the slate debris into granules for road fill and into ultra-fine powder, which they sell to the plastics and cosmetics industries. No one in Bethesda denies that McAlpines have brought new life to the Penryn quarry. But there are reservations about the brute force and sheer scale of the operation. There's the feeling that modernization has contributed to the chronic unemployment of the area. McAlpine is the only important employer in or around Bethesda. And yet they can offer work to no more than 200 men.
Well, it's only all machines there now, eh? You know, wasn't like before, eh? You know, it's all machines ever.
It's not a quarry anymore, as I say, it's a factory. But in the old days, used to be everybody's little bread and butter. But now it's only a few. In the old days, it'd be a few thousands working there.
2,300.
That's right. It's only about 600 now, I believe. I'm not certain. Because they've mechanized it so much, but it's gone to a factory instead of a quarry.
Like the other slate towns, Bethesda has had little success in attracting new industry in a time of general economic recession. The men lucky enough to have found work at the massive hydroelectric pump storage scheme in Dinorwic will be laid off over the next few months as the project nears completion. There's no sign of any major construction project anywhere in North Wales to replace it. Unemployment in North Wales is far higher than the national average, and for school leavers, there's little alternative to the dough. At the local school in Bethesda, the head of the Welsh department is Elwyn Hughes.
I find that children very often tell me at school they would like to stay in the area, and they feel, some of them feel quite strongly about staying here to work. But it's so sad when one knows that it's an impossibility in most cases.
high unemployment has driven people away in search of work. The empty houses are bought by outsiders, often English, who either renovate and resell them at higher prices or use them for a few weeks of the year as holiday homes.
Second homes in Wales and holiday homes, they do cause a tremendous threat, the influx of non-Welsh speakers to the area. They certainly have an effect. And there is some animosity because of this.
Welsh was our mother tongue. English is our second language. When the quarry was going full pelt, you see, everybody in the quarry was Welsh. And of course, naturally, we had our own traditions, and of course, we got our own culture. It's been gradually eroded, that's true with that. And I'm afraid if we're not very careful, the Welsh traditions and culture and all this will finish and die out. If that eventually happens, we're going to lose a tremendous amount of rich poetry and books and pieces of music that's helped the Welsh and everybody else in the years gone by.
Was I can mynd yn ôl I dop di dal yn pedwar eto a dal o'r tac na. A cam na dod yw'n byw a hyd y daeth. Dach chi'n mynd tynnu lawr ddim nes da chi'n dod i'r geiriau am ddim ond dydd dros dro.
Ed Povey left Brighton in 1974 to train as an art teacher in Bangor. He bought a house in Bethesda and has been there ever since.
If I'd known I was going to be here for this length of time, I would have learnt Welsh. I think that anyone who is planning to stay should definitely learn the language. I'm sure some will regard us as intruders because we are English people living in another country. I suppose the children will go to the local primary school and they'll certainly learn Welsh. The children will be more integrated than we can ever be. One thing that has affected me with the decline of the slate industry is really the sadness that comes across in Bethesda of a culture which in some ways is dying. It's very sad. I wanted somehow to draw in the influence of the slate industry into the Carnarvon mural. And I decided the only apt way I could do that was to depict a quarry funeral. The slate workers that approached me, they agreed. It would be very nice to paint a merry picture of people splitting slate. But the truth of the matter is that there's been so much pain and anguish over the years connected with the slate industry that the only real way to express it was a funeral. There's no future. Very sad, really.
Yeah. Mi fyddwn ni toc. Fi'n gadael y chwarel mewn chydig. Ond dwi'n teimlo fod y chwarel yn gwaed neu mwyn gloddio mewn gwaed celt. Rwydd diom o bwys pa o lad ewch chi. Mae'r celt yn tyllu o dan y ddiar. A mi'n ei wir wrth gwrs yn styniog. A fanna adawau lle dwi'n meddwl gollai o. Ond eto o ran iechyd, wel, byddwn ni well. Yn lle byddwn ni nesa. Dyna'r oll am ni sgynnau i ddweud.
Everything that comes here is in pulling down the traditions of the Welsh people in the area. Little trains or what have you, if they bring in the tourist, that brings in the shops and the different things. It's a summer thing. And everything, every shop caters for the tourist then. And in winter, there's nothing. And because there's nothing and there no people living here, everything, the shops close, the amenities for people go from here and close. And in the winter, there's nothing for us.
Beginning of 47, they worked down here by candlelight. See the small light there? That was the sort of a light they had to work in. They were allowed to buy 5 candles per month to last a day. In some of the chambers, these natural faults are further apart. All he does is find a halfway and he'll drill a hole into the cleavage.
Tourism may well be the last hope for the economic survival of the slate communities of North Wales. Yet cultural survival and the preservation of what's left of the Welsh quarrying tradition is far more important to the few remaining slate makers.
You wouldn't perhaps understand it, but anything Welsh is very dear to us. And I'd rather see it die, I think, than just survive as a little puppet to please the English or any other nation. I'd rather see it die than that. At least we'd have our self-respect then, yeah.